Hi there. Welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin. I'm a volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds. Today, I'd like to start our program off with an article which appeared in a recent issue of the New York Times. The title of the article is Hiring Slows, Showing Toll from the Strikes and the Storms. Employers added 12,000 jobs last month, and the political reaction is fierce. This article was written for the New York Times by Lydia DePillis. Job creation stalled in October, a month battered by strikes and by hurricanes, presenting an unclear picture of where the labor market was headed, even as overall economic growth remained impressive. Employers added only 12,000 jobs on a seasonally adjusted basis, the Labor Department reported, substantially fewer than economists had forecast. The unemployment rate, based on a survey of households, remained 4.1%. The report is the last before a presidential election, in which polls have consistently found the economy to be a top issue for voters, and the low figure supplied a talking point for Republicans. It also strengthened the case for another interest rate cut when Federal Reserve policymakers meet next week. It's hard to say this was a strong report if it were not for the strikes and hurricanes, said Oliver Allen, a senior U.S. economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics. If the numbers still look like that next month, we'll have another step down to revisions. It's a pretty weak set of prints. Gains for August and September were revised downward, bringing the three-month average to 104,000, down from 189,000 over the 6 months before that. The effect from a strike at Boeing, which began in mid-September and put about 35,000 workers on the picket lines, was fairly clear. Transportation equipment manufacturing outside automobiles dropped by 38,000 jobs, which probably reflected furloughs among other Boeing workers and those of its suppliers, as well as the striking workers. Businesses around the idled Boeing plants, such as auto body shops and fast food places in Renton, Washington, suffered as well. Anything that was discretionary for spending got annihilated at that point, said Diane Dobson, chief executive of the Greater Renton Chamber of Commerce. There were some that relied largely on Boeing, speaking about potentially closing their doors. The more difficult factor to assess was the effect of hurricanes Milton and Helene, which each cut a wide path of destruction across the southeast during those times. Leisure and hospitality hiring was essentially flat at the time after strong growth in previous months, suggesting that the disasters had shuttered many restaurants and entertainment venues. But an unusually low survey response rate probably also clouded reality on the ground. The storm's fingerprints may also be visible on average hourly earnings, which grew 0.4% over the month, or 4% from a year earlier. That measure of wages is subject to changes in the composition of employment, so the loss of lower paid hourly workers during weather disruptions could have raised it slightly. Another income measure showed steady cooling. And temporary help services, which have been shrinking for 2.5 years, lost 48,500 jobs, possibly because contract workers would be the first to be cut loose during a disaster, or simply not hired as they otherwise would have been. What had been a hot job market in and around Asheville, North Carolina, might take a while to heal, noted Nathan Ramsey, director of the Mountain Area Workforce Development Board in western North Carolina. Helene hit the region during its peak fall tourism season, and with the water system still a shambles, its breweries, hotels, and eateries were unable to open. We could see our unemployment rate rise to going to 10% or more based on those numbers, and the damage is not over as more layoffs are anticipated, Mr. Ramsey said. A big concern is the loss of housing, which could push local residents to have to relocate, even if rebuilding creates more jobs in construction down the road. Two sectors responsible for most of the growth over the past year, healthcare and government, made up for the losses, with poll workers possibly adding to public payrolls. But if such sluggishness continues, the economy will struggle to soak up the number of people who enter the workforce each month. Beyond recent disruptions, the bigger data picture is of a labor market with very little movement. Employers are not posting many positions, and hiring remains depressed. That creates a challenge for anyone out there looking for work. The share of unemployed workers who find jobs has been declining, and the average duration of unemployment has been increasing. But relatively few people are being laid off or quitting, and economic growth remains energetic, largely on account of muscular consumer spending. Measures of consumer confidence have been rebounding as inflation has sunk near historically normal levels. Selma Hepp, chief economist at the real estate data firm CoreLogic, helped oversee a recent survey of members of the National Association for Business Economics that showed an overall sense of optimism. They are planning to continue to hold on to their talent, and I think a lot of that has to do with how difficult it was to find talent, Dr. Hepp said. Uncertainty is there, but when you look at corporate performance, there is no reason to lay off people. That's how Elaine Reed is feeling. She runs a boutique chocolate maker in Atlanta called Chocolatl, and she says her sales have been running well above previous years, giving her confidence to hire plenty of seasonal employees heading into the crucial holiday season. At the same time, finding workers has been less challenging as the intensely competitive labor market of 2022 and early 2023 has eased. When we were in our hiring crunch, I think there were a lot of people assessing what they wanted to do with work, Ms. Reed said. Slightly more than a year ago is when we started seeing candidates who were a lot more enthusiastic and good enough fits for what we were hiring for. What Ms. Reed may be sensing is the growth in the labor force over the past few years, which has been fueled by a few factors. A wave of immigrants has added millions of willing hands, and pay increases have drawn many people off the sidelines, particularly women whose participation in the labor force has set records as new standards for work flexibility have made it easier for them to juggle responsibilities at home and on the job. That trend may have run its course, though, for now. Labor force participation for people in their prime working years, ages 25 to 54, has fallen for 2 months. Slackening wage growth could be one reason. The availability of child care could be another. Employment growth in that industry has flattened in the last 6 months after federal aid from COVID relief bills expired, while prices for child care and school tuition have spiked. Even if such pressure does not pull people out of the workplace entirely, it could lead them to work fewer hours. The average work week, which spiked during the pandemic, is now slightly shorter than it was back in 2019. Kayla Lengel, who works for the Utah state government and lives outside of Salt Lake City, made that choice a couple of months back. She already pays for daycare for her 2-year-old and thought she could save money when her 5-year-old enters kindergarten. But finding care after school for random holidays and every time one child got sick meant it was still going to be very, very expensive for her. That's why she decided to go part-time, foregoing a substantial chunk of her salary. So many people want to work, Ms. Lenge said. They want to keep their skills up and be involved in their industry, but they feel they cannot work full-time, or it's just not worth working full-time when a child care costs what it does. Ultimately, if the labor market appears to be taking a real turn for the worse, the Federal Reserve may step in to cut interest rates more sharply. Lending standards have already been loosening, which could give employers more confidence to invest once uncertainty from the election has resolved. It might be too early now to see that, said Andrew Husby, a senior U.S. economist at BNP Paribas. But what we've been seeing over the last year could be promoting a bit more growth. The next article that I would like to read for you is from the Wall Street Journal, November 6th, the day after the election. The title of this article is, Many Workers Take Sick Days Needing a Break from Politics. The article was written for the journal by Tae-Ping Chin and Ray Smith. Workplaces and offices will feel emptier than usual on Election Day and maybe for a few days after. Workers are taking sick days Tuesday while companies from Room and Board to the Bank of America are closing stores or letting staff take time off to vote. Sick time use during the week of Election Day in 2016 and 2020 rose 10% from the years before or after, data from payroll and benefits provider Gusto show. Vacation and personal days jumped by similar levels during 2020's election week also. In Erie County, Pennsylvania, 54-year-old Carolyn Tellers was working from home on Tuesday and planning to take off Wednesday as well to disconnect from the news. In Pennsylvania, the incessant political ads have been wearing, she said, adding, we're all exhausted. Her plan was to drive to a local state park and only periodically check in with social media. In a survey of 2,000 workers by Owl Labs, a maker of video conferencing devices, 28% of the workers said they might not come into the office after the election if they were unhappy with the results. Nearly half of the employees reported feeling that their colleagues or employers' political opinions made them want to avoid their workplaces. Kevin Roll, 46, who works in procurement at a manufacturing plant in Tyler, Texas, said he's taking Wednesday off to avoid political talk. Roll says he tried to emulate his parents, who never disclosed who they were voting for, even to their children. He says he'll spend the day on his tractor or tending to his chickens instead. Now everybody knows what everybody's politics are, and they decide who they like and don't like based on their politics, he says. Some states require employers to give workers time off to vote if requested, and in recent years, numerous companies have gone further by closing stores or offering paid time off on Election Day. More than 2,000 companies, from Walmart to Bank of America, committed to give employees time off to vote on or before Tuesday, according to organizers of the nonpartisan Time to Vote campaign. Furniture retailer Room and Board won't open its nearly two dozen stores on Tuesday, with the exception of its Seattle location, while bookseller Half Price Books will close its offices, warehouses, and stores 2 hours early so that employees could get paid time off to vote. Some businesses are offering workers time off after Election Day. In Birmingham, Michigan, corporate sales training company Innovative Selling Partners was offering staff Wednesday off and a half day on Friday to demonstrate our commitment to our employees' mental health and overall well-being, founder and chief executive Patrick Montgomery said. In San Diego, 49-year-old sales professional Suzanne Ferrari decided months ago to take Election Day off, knowing she would otherwise have a hard time focusing on her work. Her plan was to stay home, clean, and watch Harry Potter. She has since decided to take off Wednesday too. I was like, oh shoot, they probably won't have any answer by the end of the night, she says. She may still have longer to wait. The last presidential election wasn't called for President Biden until the Saturday after Election Day. The next article that I would like to read for you is from the October 30th issue of the Wall Street Journal. This article was written for the journal by Peter Grant, and the title is Bosses Order Workers Back to Offices in Boon to Landlords. America's historic retreat from the office building may finally be winding down. More companies now are backing away from the looser workplace policies that they adopted during the early years of the pandemic, as executives increasingly recommit to promoting an office culture. Amazon.com called corporate staffers back into the office 5 days a week last month. The company is now looking for a big block of expansion space in Manhattan, according to brokers. Dell Technologies said it is requiring its global sales team to work from company offices full-time now. 3M's new chief executive last week said their company expected higher attendance from senior employees at the company's headquarters and other large sites. One-third of all companies required workers to be in the office 5 days a week in the third quarter, up from 31% in the second quarter, according to Flex Index, which tracks workplace strategies. That terminated a streak over the previous five quarters when that rate had steadily fallen. One reason for that decline was because low unemployment gave employers leverage when pressing for more remote work. Now the white-collar workforce is not growing as much, shifting the balance of power back to the managers. No one sees workplaces returning to pre-pandemic patterns, but most believe the worst is likely over for the office sector. But signs of stabilization hardly signal an end to office market turmoil. The vacancy rate is stabilizing at a near-record level of 13.8%, up from 9.4% in the fourth quarter back in 2019. Since the second quarter of 2020, U.S. office tenants have vacated close to 209 million square feet of office space, the highest amount ever for a four-and-a-half-year period, according to data from CoStar Group. A lot of the current empty office space is now considered obsolete. It may never be filled. Defaults and other missed payments continue to rise. In September, the delinquency rate of office loans converted into securities increased to 8.36%, which was the highest rate since November of 2013, according to data firm Trepp. Banks, which have been reporting third quarter earnings, say problems with distressed office loans greatly eclipse difficulties with other types of commercial property that are struggling primarily because of high interest rates. The real issue is office, KeyCorp Chief Executive Chris Gorman said, referring to the commercial property industry in general. Furthermore, leases for about 40% of the office space tenanted at the beginning of the pandemic have not yet matured, according to CoStar. When they do, many of those tenants are expected to shed space. The winding down is not over, said Phil Mobley, CoStar's National Director of Office Analytics. Still, after eight consecutive quarters of contraction in office space, the amount of occupied office space essentially stayed flat during the second and third quarters, CoStar said. In New York, vacancy is falling thanks in part to expanding financial services firms such as Citadel, Ares Management, and Blue Owl Capital. Artificial intelligence firms, which have been one of the few bright spots in San Francisco's hard-hit office market, have now begun to lease space in other markets, such as Denver, Atlanta, and Seattle. Companies that offer space with gyms, outdoor decks, and fine dining restaurants in their properties say those amenities are luring workers back to their desks. HSBC Bank, which in 2022 leased about 270,000 square feet for its U.S. headquarters in a new Manhattan development named The Spiral, added an additional 35,000 square feet this year, partly because employee attendance soared to 80% from less than 40% at its old space. "It was clear that we needed more space almost immediately," said a spokeswoman. Investors are noticing the shift in market psychology these days. In October, developer Tishman Speyer completed a $3.5 billion refinancing of a revitalized Rockefeller Center, the largest issuance ever for a single office asset. That paves the way for other owners of other well-leased office properties to follow suit, analysts said. Demand in the market from bond buyers was not only rising, but unsatisfied, said Rob Speyer, chief executive of the firm. And the following article, "Starbucks to Staff, Work in the Office or Else," was in the same issue of October 30th of the Wall Street Journal. This article was written for the Journal by Jennifer Kalfas and Heather Haddon. Coffee chain boosts its enforcement of its mandate for 3 days a week. Starbucks is stepping up efforts to enforce its return to the office mandate with a warning: comply with the policy or risk termination. This company will be instituting an accountability process in January to ensure that corporate employees comply with requirements to work in the office 3 days a week, according to an internal message obtained by the Wall Street Journal. The message noted that employees may face termination if they don't meet office requirements. Bloomberg reported the news on Monday. Starbucks said that the company's expectations for hybrid corporate employees have not changed, but it is reminding workers that they must follow them. Starbucks is not increasing the number of days that employees are back in the office. "We are continuing to support our leaders as they hold their teams accountable," a spokesperson said. Starbucks new chief executive, Brian Niccol, has a hybrid work arrangement himself. The former CEO of Chipotle Mexican Grill, who took the helm of Starbucks in September, Niccol maintains a home in Northern California and commutes to the Seattle office by corporate jet. Starbucks has said Niccol would meet or exceed Starbucks in-office mandates. Some workers have expressed skepticism of Niccol's arrangement. For about 2 years now, the company has required corporate employees to come into the office for 3 days each week. The message sent this week, though, said that the company also will no longer be requiring employees in the office on Tuesday, leaving individual leaders to determine the best common day for the teams. The move comes as a flurry of companies reassess their in-office requirements years after the coronavirus pandemic prompted shutdowns and normalized remote work. Executives have said that they seek to rebuild an office culture that existed before the pandemic. A higher percentage of companies required employees to be in the office 5 days each week in the third quarter compared with the second quarter, according to Flex Index, which tracks workplace strategies. Meanwhile, U.S. office vacancy rates are stabilizing now, and investors are showing interest in office properties. The following article is from the September 23rd issue of the Wall Street Journal. "Will artificial intelligence make job recruiting more efficient but less fair?" The Wall Street Journal asked readers what they think about companies that are relying on artificial intelligence to screen candidates. And here are some of their responses. If you're hurting for a job or looking for the right person to hire, you know how difficult the process can be. Already, more job seekers are robo-filing hundreds of applications online, flooding recruiters with responses that make it hard to responsibly screen all candidates. Machines now are in the middle of the process, and artificial intelligence, while imperfect, is increasingly running the show, putting some trade-offs into sharper focus. So the journal wanted to know what the readers think about this form on an ethics standpoint, and so we asked. This is the question that was asked. Research shows that some AI-driven tasks, such as evaluating job candidates, are more prone to discrimination. But using AI also allows more applicants to be considered, since there are only so many applications that HR can read. Is that trade-off acceptable? Robert Garrison in Dallas responded, AI does not have a bad day. In my experience, humans are naturally biased, prone to discrimination as well. Unlike humans, though, artificial intelligence will never have a bad day. See the applicant as a potential competitor, consider appearance, or care what state they live in. Bias comes in many forms, and many of those forms will be reduced or eliminated using a robot. And Nate Sakritz in Portage, Michigan responded, it depends on the job. My answer is what I call a pens on. It depends on, in this case, what the job is. AI might be okay for screening applicants for entry-level repetitive tasks, but in Good to Great, Jim Collins said the best companies first get the right people on the bus. Can AI determine whether or not a job applicant's personality will mesh with his coworkers? Can AI hear inflection in somebody's writing? Can AI tell if an applicant used AI to complete his application or resume? Artificial intelligence is not really intelligent at all. It doesn't really think. It's a bunch of I's and O's that a programmer put together in a big, fast calculator. This does bring us to the end of our program on Careers Today. I would like to take this opportunity to wish each of you a joyous and a very happy Thanksgiving, hopefully with those closest to you. Thanks for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.